today we've got Aaron Frost, the CEO and founder of Hero Devs, back with us to talk more, I guess, smack about CVEs and end of life. And I'm really excited because last time Aaron and I had a chat, after we hit stop, there's always, you know, some chit chat back and forth. And Aaron brought up the, we'll say, unique problem of companies and open source projects and Linux distributions and kind of everybody that don't want to issue CVEs or at least note old versions are vulnerable to a specific CVE. And so, Aaron, I'm super excited to chat about this one. So why don't you kind of set the stage for us, explain to us what we're talking about, and we'll take it from there.
Yeah, well, I mean, A, thanks for having me back. I had fun last time we chatted, so it's cool to be back. I'm excited about this topic, and then, you know, happy St. Patrick's Day.
That's right. This is going to come out way after St. Patrick's Day, but Aaron and I are chatting on St. Patrick's Day, hence the green hat, which is very nice.
Yep. So, you know, usually larger organizations that are, you know, developing open source and providing access to a large community, a lot of these big companies, as they end of life versions and the project goes on, they don't really like to consider those end of life versions when they're researching new security problems. And, it is costly to look at, you know, if you're supporting 3 active versions and there's 10 end of life versions, it is costly to validate that a new security problem affects each of the previous, you know, 9 end of life versions. Like that, it's actually more expensive to validate it backwards than it is even on the things you currently support. So a lot of organizations, they'll, as they report a new CVE, and Josh, you know this, they won't include those end of life versions. And that's kind of the point. Some people think that that's fine, but I think it's at least inaccurate, because it leaves me and you out in the world with one of the end of life versions going, oh, hell yeah, I'm not affected by that version, by that issue, but you are. We just didn't include that version in the CVE, in the security report.
Right. Well, and you might be. So I have the other side of the coin a little bit on this. And so one of the things we would do when I was at Red Hat, and we did this kind of work, is when a vulnerability would come up, we would look at our like obscenely old version of something we were shipping and be like, please don't affect this. Please don't affect this. And sometimes it wouldn't, because it could be in a recent feature. It could be due to some compiler bug, you know, whatever. There's a million things it can be. And so sometimes it doesn't. And I will admit, just from my experience in the space, it's pretty rare. I think more often than not, the vast majority of vulnerabilities are like X version and below are what they affect. Yeah. And what's funny is a lot of projects will say X version and below. They don't give a floor to the version, but then there are projects and companies that will say only this version, right? Yeah. Like version 1.6.0 to version 1.6.9, that's the affected version. Except anyone who tests it or looks can see that version 1.5 is also affected.
Yeah. And what you just said right there at the end, Josh, is the problem for me. If I'm a hacker and you tell me that there's an HTTP 3, a critical problem with it in any framework, I'm going to go back and find out when HTTP 3 was introduced, and I'm going to start testing as those versions too.
Yeah.
Because if you tell me it only affects the current 2 versions, I'm going to know that it goes all the way back to the beginning. And so by publishing the fact that the CVE exists and that there's now a fix for the current versions, you're showing the hackers, like the bad actors, the easiest way to hack the community. And so and this is where my ethics kicks in, where it's like, it actually is not ethical to not fully disclose everyone that's affected by this. And so I look at this, it does cost money though. And it's their prerogative where they're going to spend money. The good news, Josh, is people like me and you, if we find out, this actually affects 3 or 4 other versions, there is a way to attempt to get that CVE report righted. It's not as easy as it might be, but I think that it's okay. And so we can fix it. It's just the fact that the problem even exists is the issue, in my opinion.
Sure. Well, I mean, so I can sort of relate to companies and especially open source projects, which are just chronically under-resourced, not wanting to look at older versions. And you can sort of make the argument if you squint sideways and say, we don't know for sure, so we're just not going to report on it. And that like gets weird, I think. Now, the challenge is updating the data. So there's two paths here, and I've been on this train countless times, and it's just full of pain and suffering. So there are instances where companies have a product that's just straight up end-of-lifed, and a researcher might find a vulnerability in that product that's just straight up end-of-lifed. Like there's no next version, right? It's just dead. And they go to the company and say, I found a security vulnerability in this product. And the company says, it's end of life, we don't care. And that conversation is now over for the most part, which happens all the time. So now there is a concept in the CVE universe where you can go to MITRE and say, I have found a security vulnerability in this end of life product. And he like, here's all the information. Please give me a CVE. And they will do it. It takes a while. It can, well, I shouldn't say that. It can take anywhere from 1 hour to 1 month, maybe if you're lucky. Like it's kind of unknown, right? Where the you can say that I went to the company, they said no, I'm coming to you. You're the CNA of last resort. Give me my CVE. And they might do that. Now, it gets harder when the company is the CNA and they've issued a CVE and you want them to update it. Here's where things turn into a mess. You go to the company, they say, nope, we don't care, it's end of life. You go to MITRE and say, hey, they said they don't care, it's end of life. Here's the information. And MITRE says, you have to work with the company. We can't touch this CVE because it's the CNA CVE. And then you go back to the company and they're like, haha, no. And now you have a mess. And that one is, I have never seen that to completion because I've always just thrown my hands in the air and said, screw it, I'm done here. I don't care anymore. And that sucks. That's really tough.
I have a pretty similar understanding, slightly different, and I'm hoping maybe I'm going to learn right now from you. From what I know, there are three root CNAs, like general roots in MITRE. So MITRE is a root, Red Hat is a root, and Microsoft is a root. So if the actual CNA root for like a specific technology says no, I think you can appeal to any of those three top level roots and say, hey, will you validate this CVE for me? And so it's not just MITRE. You could go to Red Hat or you could go to Microsoft. Problem is what if Microsoft or Red Hat are the roots? And so now you're appealing to them about themselves potentially. So yeah.
For sure, for sure. And that's tricky. Well, and each one has their own lanes because Red Hat's focus is open source. Microsoft's focus is just the obviously enormous quantity of Microsoft stuff. And then MITRE is kind of the everything else or the Hufflepuff of CNAs, right? And so, yeah, I know, right? Well, hat tip to the Harry Potter fans there. Yeah, and that is tricky, right? Because if you go to someone like Red Hat and they say, we don't want to do this, we don't agree with you, now you have a mess. And then you have to go to MITRE and you have to, sometimes you can make noise in public and it's just a huge pain in the butt. And it's super confusing. And unfortunately, almost all the researchers just get fed up with it and they give up because it's totally not worth it.
I'll throw faith into the system. Like, Microsoft's not going to report an issue on Windows XP, but a lot of third-party researchers will get CVEs or new, they'll get new security issues released against Windows XP. So, just because, someone's big like Microsoft, it doesn't mean they're just going to shut out and shut down all security reports, thus enabling the bad actors only. So there is good work in there, and me and you are talking about it is difficult to work through this MITRE system, but I'll just say it's probably a necessary evil that it be a little harder to go around some of these roots sometimes, because ultimately the roots aren't bad people; they just don't they just might not have enough resources,
Right. Yes. For sure.
And
For sure.
in that sense, they're great people that just don't have enough time or enough money, and that's
Right.
not their fault, and
Right.
so. It's weird to finger wag them for not having enough time and money. What's weird though is you try and give them your time and your money, and they go, I'm not updating that CD. And that's where it's like, that's weird. I would suspect you would want to take care of your community a little more like meticulously and let them know.
Yes. I mean, so I actually just went through this maybe a week or two ago, where there was a Linux distribution that they only specified certain versions of something being affected by a vulnerability. And I'm like, you know, this affects the older versions, right? And they were like, we didn't research it. And I'm like, ah, I don't want to do this. Like, I'm not going to do this because I don't care enough to put the effort in. But like, we all know this is a like X and below. And I mean, they held their ground. They were like, we didn't research it. We're not willing to do that. We don't want to research it because we're busy enough as it is. And part of me is like, I understand why you're saying that, because if you are wrong in the infinitesimally small chance, then you're gonna catch crap from your users, right? And I think the other piece of this, though, the thing I love is when I talk especially to open source projects, they're like, why would anyone run that version? It's like everyone is running that version. Like,
Everyone. No one wants to be on old versions, but you have to be. So
that's
it's
right.
yeah.
And that excuse is always the most amusing to me, where it's like, oh, that's the old version. No one should be using that. Now, I did, however, want to steer us into the direction of open source and end of life and older versions, because I think this particular topic is super interesting, where when you have an open source project, like if you look at Red Hat or Microsoft or Ubuntu or Oracle or whoever, they generally have very well-defined lifespans of products. Where we're going to release a product, and in 5 years it goes into extended maintenance mode, and then 2 years after that it's end of life, right? Whatever.
That
They
is.
all do this all the time. Open source projects don't work like that. They might be like, oh, it's time to release version two, and I guess we're not updating version one anymore now. And like that is so much more confusing and different. And I'm actually curious, like, how your crew deals with stuff like this, because some projects will say keep it, like version 1.x alive for a period of time. Some projects are like, eh, whatever, it's abandoned, we don't care anymore. And like, how do you even begin to unwind a problem like that? It's never obvious.
Yeah, it's brutal. I mean, I thought a lot about this through conversations with people like you, watching the OpenEOX standard trying to get past where they kind of get everyone to use the same syntax to describe their end of life. So it's like, yo, not only do we not have standardized end of life, most people don't even have an end of life policy. So I can tell you this, like, this is very, very specific to me. Here at Devs, we're about to launch $20 million fund to open source authors where we say, hey, if you will publish your end of life policies, if you will follow those same policies that you've published and then have a commercial support provider for when it does go end of life so people can know where they can get support, Hero Devs will put you into this fund and we will, we'll give you an upfront donation of somewhere around $5,000 for the initial work to standardize on your end of life policies and get them published on your website and to publish that provider. And then if Hero Devs is that provider, you'll get a share of that revenue back to those projects. Like, so if Hero Devs
Nice.
were to sell some of that, so we're trying to allow people, you're already going to end of life your policy. You're already going to end of life that piece, that version. Make it a little more standardized, make it a little more easy for like the OpenEOX team to read and like scan your website and know what your policy is. And then point your community at like somewhere where they can get support for this after the end of life, where it's commercially supported, it's someone that they can trust. If you do all that, you're enabled through Hero Devs to get some upfront meaningful donations and then a share of the revenue of the ongoing sales of that end of life version. And so we're trying to monetize for you, the open source author, your end of life version. Like you were about to walk away from it, you were about to throw it out. I'm trying to say, throw it out this way though, and you can get revenue donated back to your project. And so
Nice.
anyway, we're working on this. And it's a good thing because helping authors make money is a good thing. You look at the event stream thing that happened in Node a few years ago, and that author was a good person. He just didn't care about that library anymore. And someone came in and took advantage of that community, the Node community, which is horrible. And we need to make it easier for people to get paid for their work and their effort, especially when
hundreds of millions of installations of your software, of your open source project exists. And so,
yeah. Additionally, I look at the security problem as like, yo, we have to secure everything because can I just jump back out? I really am frustrated by this problem, the impetus of the show. Open source projects not accurately reporting the affected versions. It really bothers me because that is where the hackers go. If I look at a major backend framework today and they fix a security issue on the latest version and it only affects the current two versions, I know for a fact it's going to affect the current two and probably the previous three. And if I don't know for a fact, I'm at least smart enough to go look, when was that code where their fix affects it? When was that initial code introduced? And if it was introduced five versions ago, I can find that out in 2 minutes on github.com.
For sure.
Like, it's really not a thing to find out how, like, the amount of effort required to guess, not even perform the test, but just guess how long it's existed. It's like 5 minutes. And so that's what bugs me about the inaccurate reporting.
Yeah. So I've got a great story to add to that. I have a red teamer friend that the first thing he does when he goes off on his mission is he scans whatever application he's pen testing and he looks at their dependencies, and he specifically looks for outdated dependencies that have exactly this problem where the newer versions claim to fix things and the older versions might not have it. And he's like, every time, like one of them is I hit one of them every time, like it literally never fails. Mm-hmm. And so, it's completely a thing that happens. And I think just thinking out loud a tad here, and just from my past experiences, is rather than taking the approach of we don't know, so we're not adding the data, historically, we would always take the approach in security of we assume vulnerable unless proven not. And this is where I think the more correct way to be filing things like vulnerability information is going to be to say version X and below, even if you haven't investigated it, it is almost certainly the more, we'll say, community and correct thing to do. And then if needed, someone could come in and figure out exactly the range if someone really wanted to, which, I mean, there might be a reason. I don't know why they would. But I think generally speaking, and there's another piece to this, is I'm having this discussion right now at work, actually, is just because like some vulnerabilities might not be showing up for some incredibly old version of something you're running, like it is incredibly end of life and out of date. Like that is your problem. Who cares if it's missing one vulnerability out of like 700 you expect to be on the list? Like stop running old unsupported software. Like that is the problem here.
There's a lot of reasons why people have to run that old version. And
like, for sure.
Like, stop using it. Oh, it's easier said than done. A lot of times, like some of my customers, they'll sell an on-prem, they'll have a cloud version, and then their customers like, well, I don't do on-prem. I don't do cloud. I need on-prem. We're like,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
So then they sell it to them. They figure out how to, you know, package it up and ship it on-prem. And inside that contract where they ship it on-prem, they're like, oh, I'll never force you to upgrade if you're not ready. Like they'll just be like one line in the contract where you didn't even understand how much this was going to bear you. So now you're pinned. You let this customer pin themselves to some old version because they don't want to upgrade and you can't force them to. And so now you have to support that until they're ready to upgrade. So you kind of innocently let them pin you to this old version. So it's not even like your current SaaS version has moved on, but they're still pinned to this old version. You have to make sure they're supported based on the contract you signed, you know, 10 years ago. So how you get into being forced to support old, it's actually very easy and it's very innocent and it's not even in your control anymore. And so it really kind of sucks.
That does blow. And that happens. Now, at the same time, when you're in an environment like that, when you're running something on-prem and it is out of date, there are other ways you can compensate. Right. It's one thing when you have a service sitting on the wide open internet. It's a whole nother thing when you have like an internal service that's only used by a handful of people. Right. You can start logging certain things. You can lock certain things down. It is a very different universe. And I'm sensitive to that because I agree. There are many, many, we'll say, just ways people are doing all this. And I know I just said stop running old stuff. And that's the antithesis of what I know is the correct thing to do, because no one can. But I think there's also, it is a difficult situation to be in on both sides of it, right? As a vendor looking at what can I do, and as a customer trying to run their thing. And I mean, there's not a lot of, like, your company is an answer, obviously, right? And I mean, I don't want to turn this into an ad for Hero Devs for the next however many minutes, but like there are ways to do some of this stuff. And it's so hard, man. Like, I think the one thing we could probably all agree on, though, regardless of what your position might be, is claiming certain applications, only certain versions are vulnerable to something, and not just doing like a less than, feels wrong to me.
I agree with you 100%. I think you said this already. I just wanted to echo it. It should be assumed that it affects everything unless you know it doesn't. Like, okay, I'll give you a real tangible example. Imminently, Chrome is going to release observables as like a native API. If in 2 years, there's a security problem found in the observables, I think it's pretty safe to assume it doesn't exist in anything prior to this latest version of Chrome. Like, it's obvious that's a brand new thing. But if it's not tied to a brand new API, I don't know why we wouldn't just assume it affects, until I do the research, it affects everything.
Yeah. And I mean, web browsers are one of the unique pieces of software, I think, that running an out-of-date version is probably unacceptable in every possible instance, right?
I totally agree.
Although I say that, and I wonder how many people are still running IE6 to access some ActiveX web page that was built by an intern in, 2005. It's not zero.
Electron challenges your position a little bit, because it's a browser technology running as a native app. So it challenges a little, but I generally agree with you.
Electron. Oh,
I love it. I love Electron. I do think more companies need to just imply that it affects everything.
Yeah. Well, in projects, I mean, everybody. It is a problem I see on a regular basis, and I've argued with many of them. I always lose, but
You know, it'd be cool, and I guess I'm ideating, it would be wonderful if, for example, I know Sneak has like has a dependency health score. I think it would be great if it looked at your end of life, you have an out of date version, and as part of the health, it said, there's this many security fixes after this version. So it didn't even affect this version, but I can assume probably a big chunk of those affect this version too. They just weren't reported correctly. And so it'd be nice if the sneaks of the world inside their open source health scores could just assume that all new CVEs affect the old versions as well, and kind of ding you big time on that.
I mean, that's an interesting idea, actually. And I'm going to think about this one now, because you are correct. If I have an application, let's say I've got version 1.2, making up stuff, they're on version 4, and there's 30 vulnerabilities between my version and the latest version that don't say they affect version 1.2. It's almost safe to assume some percentage of those do, right? Yeah. It is highly unlikely that all of those vulnerabilities would only affect the newer version. And so one of the things, one of my complaints about the whole vulnerability universe is we love to obsess over like individual findings. And like in your particular instance, you do obsess over individual findings because that's what you're fixing. But when we're looking at these systems, like we need to zoom out sometimes and just take a look and say things like, if there are 30 vulnerabilities between the version I'm running and the current version, but my tooling is reporting none of them, there's almost certainly something else going on, be it the data's bad, my tool is broken, like it could be a million things, right? And so I think that's where you can look at the shape of a graph and say like, yes, there is 100% something wrong with the particular package I have. But now, like we'll kind of finish the conversation on this one, this question I have for you is, so like in the context of someone like Hero Devs, let's say there is a vulnerability that isn't cataloged as affecting an older version. Do you still look at the new vulnerabilities and decide, yes, it does affect the old version, and fix it for the older version then? Like, do you do that level of research? Cause that's hard, man.
Oh yeah. No, 100% we do. Like we have customers that purchase from us supported versions, even of Node, for example, because the Node team said,
Well, that only affects V8 when it's in Chrome. So I'm not going to fix it because Node's not in Chrome.
Right.
Our customers still want to fix. So we like we'll fix it for enterprises, even in life versions of things like Node. But I definitely look at my customers and say, hey, you're running, you know, an end of life version of like .NET. Well, I know for a fact some of these CVEs affect .NET, that version. The CVE just didn't get a reported that way. So I'm going to ship to you the more secure version of .NET, for example. It's not just .NET, but as an example, you actually have the most secure version of .NET 6 in the world. The CVE, I'm working on getting the CVE to admit that .NET 6 is vulnerable to it, but I'm not there yet. So I do fix it and provide it to my customers as a way to like validate the relationship. But ultimately, I need more clout with MITRE to get through some of these conversations. And
good luck.
But MITRE's great. I said that, but like I do think MITRE, it's working in my opinion. It's working.
I don't think it is. We could probably argue that point at length. I have many thoughts on what MITRE does, and I will give them a D, maybe a D plus. But I think there's a lot to be desired in that ecosystem. And I will echo your frustration with .NET. I have fought with the .NET stuff countless times because it is very common for the vulnerability data pushed into the CVE program, especially for .NET, to have it to be incorrect for a variety of reasons. And getting that fixed by contacting Microsoft and other organizations is like, oh man, it has been brutal. It has been so brutal. I think the last one I got, I ended up like going through Red Hat because they were being flagged in one of their advisories and I couldn't get a hold of Microsoft. I'm like, maybe Red Hat can do something here. They got it fixed, but I'm like, oh my goodness, this is madness. But yeah, man, it's rough.
I'm literally in the exact process you just described right now.
Oh, that's good. I'm sorry. It sucks.
But I mean, it does suck, but like, it's working. So like, you know, in the same way that speed limits and other traffic laws haven't prevented a lot of the deaths, you know, things like seatbelts do an imperfect job at helping reduce. And so I do think MITRE, its net effect is good. Do I think that the system MITRE's built allows for some stuff to get through still? And yeah, I do, unfortunately. And so like, it's not perfect, but I do see how it helps.
Sure, for sure, for sure. Although the thing I'm waiting to see is the EU is supposed to create their own vulnerability database. So I can't wait for another one to come out, right? That should make things way easier.
Well, I mean, honestly, they usually do a better job. So I can't wait till they have that because I would love to work with them, to be honest. I'd love to work with them.
That's a good point. We'll see. We'll see. I'm always terrified, though, that they'll make something that's just CVE but worse. So who knows? Who knows?
If it's CVE but it helps the consumers more, I'll be happy. That's what I'll say.
That's fair. I mean, and I think we forget about that too sometimes as vulnerability nerds. It's easy to either complain about things or claim we're right or whatever. And at the end of the day, it's really just, you know, keeping the people out there, you know, safe and on the path, man.
As long as it makes people more safe, even if it sucks more for the open source maintainers or whoever.
Well, no,
I
not
still,
them.
I still they can get worse.
Open source maintainers owe us nothing. Like, they get a free pass.
They don't. You're right. But if it made everyone safer, I would say it's probably a good thing, though.
Yeah. So, well, and I mean, this is, you know, just to deviate one last point is, I do think like creating a relationship with open source projects, like you're planning to do with your fund, like that switches the equation from open source owes us nothing to we now have a formal relationship. You owe us a little bit. Right. So, I mean, but that's the right way to do it. Right. I think expecting them to do things for absolutely free is ridiculous. So,
that's a problem.
You know, putting some cash behind it, man, that's the way to go.
Yeah. Throwing money at it. Money heals a lot of problems. And in a world where a lot of open source projects don't even have money to buy stickers.
I know, right?
I feel like putting money behind it helps make some asks feel less egregious. And so, I totally agree. Totally agree.
100%. And we'll have to, once you get that cracking, I'll have to have you back, man, to talk about it. Because this is a topic I love. So that's really, really cool. So cool. All right, Aaron. It's been a treat, man. Thank you again. It's been, I love it. We've been chatting for like 30 minutes and it feels like it's been five. It's fantastic.
Appreciate you. Thanks for doing this.
Thanks, Aaron.